The Girl of the Golden West by David Belasco. Chapter 11.
"Hello," sang out Johnson genially as he entered the girl's cabin.
At once the girl's audacity and spirit deserted her, and hanging her head, she answered meekly, bashfully, "Hello." The man's eyes swept the girl's figure. He looked puzzled and asked,
Are you going out?"
The girl was plainly embarrassed. She stammered in reply, "Yes, no, I don't know. Oh, come on in."
"Thank you," said Johnson in his best manner, and put down his lantern on the table.
Turning now, with a look of admiration in his eyes, at the same time trying to embrace her, he went on,
"Oh, girl, I'm so glad you let me come."
His glance, his tone, his familiarity sent the color flying to the girl's cheeks. She flared up instantly, her blue eyes snapping with resentment. "You stop where you are, Mr. Johnson."
Came from Walkle, at that moment closing the door which Johnson had left ajar.
At the sound of the woman's voice, Johnson wheeled round quickly, and then to his great surprise he saw that the girl was not alone, as he had expected to find her.
"I beg your pardon. I did not see anyone when I came in," he said in humble apology, his eyes the while upon Walkle,
who, having blown out the candle and removed the lantern from the table to the floor, was directing her footsteps towards the cupboard, into which she presently disappeared, closing the door behind her.
"But seeing you standing there," went on Johnson in explanation, "and looking into your lovely eyes, well, the temptation to take you in my arms was so great that I took..."
"You must be in the habit of taking things, Mr. Johnson," broke in the girl. "I seen you on the road to Monterey, going and coming, and passed a few words with you. I seen you once since, but that don't give you no excuse to begin this sort of game."
The girl's tone was one of reproach rather than of annoyance, and for the moment the young man was left with a sense of having committed an indiscretion.
Silently, sheepishly, he moved away, while she quietly went over to the fire. "Besides, you might have prospected a bit first, anyway," presently she went on, watching the tips of her slender white fingers held out, transparent, toward the fire. Just at that moment, a log dropped, turning up its glowing underside. Wheeling round with a smile, Johnson said,
"I see how wrong I was."
And then, seeing that the girl made no move in his direction, he asked, still smiling,
"May I take off my coat?"
The girl remained silent, which silence he interpreted as an assent, and went on to make himself at home.
"Thank you," he said simply. "What a bully little place you have here! It's awfully snug," he continued delightedly, as his eyes wandered about the room. "And to think that I've found you again when I... Oh, the luck of it!"
He went over to her and held out his hands, a broad yet kindly smile lighting up his strong features, making him appear handsomer even than he really was. To the girl, taking in the olive-colored skin, glowing with healthful pallor.
"Friends?" he asked.
Nevertheless, the girl did not give him her hand, but quickly drew it away. She answered his question with a question.
"Are you sorry?"
"No, I'm not sorry." To this, she made no reply, but quietly, disappointedly, returned to the fireplace, where she stood in contemplative silence, waiting for his next words. But he did not speak. He contented himself with gazing at the tender girlishness of her,
the blue-black eyes, and flesh that was so bright and pure that he knew it to be soft and firm, making him yearn for her. Involuntarily, she turned toward him, and she saw that in his face which caused her eyes to drop and her breath to come more quickly. "That dammy style just catches a woman," she ejaculated, with a little tremor in her voice. Then her mood underwent a sudden change in marked contrast to that of the moment before. "Look here, Mr. Johnson," she said. "Down at the saloon tonight, you said you always got what you wanted. Of course, I've got to admire you for that. I reckon women always do admire men for getting what they want. But if hugging me's included, just count it out." For a breathing space, there was a dead silence. "That was a lovely day, girl, on the road to Monterey, wasn't it?" of a sudden Johnson observed dreamily. The girl's eyes opened upon him wonderingly.
"Was it?"
"Well, wasn't it?" The girl thought it was, and she laughed.
"Say, take a chair and set down for a while, won't you?" was her next remark, she herself taking a chair at the table.
"Thanks," he said, coming slowly toward her, while his eyes wandered about the room for a chair.
"Say, look here," she shot out, scrutinizing him closely. "I've been thinking you didn't come to the saloon to see me tonight. What brought you?"
"It was fate," he told her, leaning over the table and looking down upon her admiringly. She pondered his answer for a moment, then blurted out,
"You're a bluff. It may have been fate, but I thought you looked kind of funny when Rance asked you if you hadn't missed the trail and wasn't on the road to see Nina Mitchell Terrena, she that lives in the Greaser settlement and has the name of Sheltering Thieves."
At the mention of thieves, Johnson paled frightfully, and the knife which he had been toying with dropped to the floor.
"Was it fate or the back trail?" asked the girl.
"It was fate," calmly reiterated the man, and looked her fairly in the eye. The cloud disappeared from the girl's face.
"Serve the coffee, Walkle," she called almost instantly. And then it was that she saw that no chair had been placed at the table for him. She sprang to her feet, exclaiming, "Oh, Lordy, you ain't got no chair yet to—"
"Careful, please, careful," quickly warned Johnson, as she rounded the corner of the table upon which his guns lay. But fear was not one of the girl's emotions. At the display of guns that met her gaze, she merely shrugged and inquired placidly,
"Oh, how many guns do you carry?"
Not unnaturally, she waited for his answer before starting in quest of a chair for him. But instead, Johnson quietly went over to the chair near the door where his coat lay, hung it up on the peg with his hat, and returning now with a chair, he answered, "Oh, several when traveling through the country."
"Well, sit down," said the girl bluntly, and hurried to his side to adjust his chair.
But she did not return to her place at the table. Instead, she took the barrel rocker near the fireplace and began to rock nervously to and fro. In silence, Johnson sat studying her, looking her through and through, as it were. "It must be strange living all alone way up here in the mountains," he remarked, breaking the spell of silence. "Isn't it lonely?"
"Lonely? Mountains lonely?" The girl's laugh rang out clearly. "Besides," she went on, her eyes fairly dancing with excitement, "I got a little pinto, and I'm all over the country on him. Finest little horse you ever saw. If I want to, I can ride right down into the summer at the foothills with miles of Injun pinks just a-laughing and tiger lilies as mad as blazes. There's a river there, too. The Injuns call it a water road, and I can get on that and drift and drift and smell the wild syringa on the banks. And if I get tired of that, I can turn my horse up grade and gallop right into the winter and the lonely pines and firs a-whisperin' and a-sighin'. Lonely? Mountains lonely, did you say? Oh, my mountains, my beautiful peaks, my sierras! God's in the air here, sure. You can see him laying peaceful hands on the mountaintops. He seems so near. You want to let your soul go right on up.
Johnson was touched at the depth of meaning in her words. He nodded his head in appreciation.
I see when you die, you won't have far to go, he quietly observed.
Minutes passed before either spoke. Then, all at once, the girl rose, and taking the chair facing his, the table between them, as at first,
"Wackel, serve the coffee!"
again she called. Immediately, Wackel emerged from the cupboard, took the coffee pot from the fire, and filled the cups that had been kept warm on the fireplace base. And after placing a cup beside each plate, she squatted down before the fire, in watchful silence.
"But when it's very cold up here, cold and it snows?" queried Johnson,
his admiration for the plucky, quaint little figure before him growing by leaps and bounds.
"Oh, the boys comes up and digs me out of my front door like...
She paused, her sunny laugh rippling out at the recollection of it all. And Johnson noted the two delightful dimples in her rounded cheeks. Indeed, she had never appeared prettier to him than when displaying her two rows of perfect, dazzling teeth, which was the case every time that she laughed.
"Like a little rabbit, eh?" he supplemented, joining in the laugh.
She nodded eagerly.
"I get digged out near every day when the mine's shut down and academy opens," went on the girl in the same happy strain, her big blue eyes dancing with merriment.
Johnson looked at her wonderingly. He questioned,
"Academy? Here? Why, who teaches in your academy?"
"Me. I'm her. I'm teacher," she told him with not a little show of pride.
With difficulty, Johnson suppressed a smile. Nevertheless, he observed soberly,
"Oh, so you're the teacher?"
"Yep. I learn myself and the boys at the same time," she hastened to explain,
and dropped a heaping teaspoon of coarse brown sugar into his cup.
"But of course academy's suspended when there's a blizzard on, 'cause no girl could get down the mountain then."
"Is it so very severe here when there's a blizzard on?"
Johnson was saying, when there came to his ears a strange sound, the sound of a wind rising in the canyon below. The girl looked at him in blank astonishment, a look that might easily have been interpreted as saying,
"Where do you hail from?"
She answered,
"Is it? Oh, Lordy, they come in a minute. All of a sudden you don't know where you are. It's awful."
"Not many women,"
digressed the man, glancing apprehensively toward the door. But she cut him short swiftly with the ejaculation,
"Bosh!"
And picking up a plate, she raised it high in the air, the better to show off its contents.
"Charlotte rusks and lemming turnover,"
she announced, searching his face for some sign of joy, her own face lighting up perceptibly.
"Well, this is a treat," cried out Johnson, between sips of coffee.
"Have one?"
"You bet," he returned,
with unmistakable pleasure in his voice. The girl served him with one of each, and when he thanked her, she beamed with happiness.
"Let me send you some little souvenir of tonight," he said a little while later. His admiring eyes settled on her hair of burnished gold, which glistened when the light fell upon it.
"Something that you just love to read in your course of teaching at the academy."
He paused to search his mind for something suitable to suggest to her. At length he questioned,
"Now, what have you been reading lately?"
The girl's face broke into smiles as she answered,
"Oh, it's an awful funny book about a kettle. He was a classic, and his name was Dent."
Johnson knitted his brows and thought a moment. "He was a classic, you say, and his name was..."
"Oh, yes, I know. Dante," he declared, with difficulty controlling the laughter that well nigh convulsed him.
"And you found Dante funny, did you?"
"Funny? I roared," acknowledged the girl with a frankness that was so genuine that Johnson could not help but admire her all the more. "You see, he loved a lady," resumed the girl, toying idly with her spoon.
"Beatrice," supplemented Johnson, pronouncing the name with an Italian accent, which, by the way, was not lost on the girl.
"How?"
she asked quickly, with eyes wide open. Johnson ignored the question. Anxious to hear her interpretation of the story, he requested her to continue.
"He loved a lady," began the girl, and broke off short.
And going over to the bookshelf, she took down a volume and began to finger the leaves absently. Presently she came back, and fixing her eyes upon him, she went on,
"It made me think of it, what you said down to the saloon tonight, about livin' so you didn't care what comes after. Well, he made up his mind, this Dantes, that 1 hour of happiness with her was worth the whole damn..."
She checked the word on her tongue, and concluded,
"outfit that come after. He was willing to sell out his chances for 60 minutes with her." Well, I just put the book down and hollered.
And once more she broke into a hearty laugh.
"Of course you did," agreed Johnson, joining in the laugh. "All the same," he presently added, "you knew he was right."
"I didn't," she contradicted with spirit, and slowly went back to the bookshelf with the book.
"You did?"
"Didn't."
"You did?"
"Didn't. Didn't."
"I don't."
"You do. You do,"
insisted the girl, plumping down into the chair which she had vacated at the table.
"Do you mean to say..."
Johnson got no further.
For the girl, with a naivete that made her positively bewitching to the man before her, went on as if there had been no interruption.
"That a feller could so wind himself up as to say, 'Just give me 1 hour of your society. Time ain't nothing. Nothing ain't nothing. Only to be a damn darn fool over you.' Ain't it funny to feel like that?"
And then, before Johnson could frame an answer,
"Yet I suppose there are people that love into the grave, and into death, and after."
The girl's voice lowered, stopped. Then, looking straight ahead of her, her eyes glistening, she broke out with,
"Golly, it just lifts you right up by your bootstraps to think of it, don't it?"
Johnson was not smiling now, but sat gazing intently at her through half-veiled lids.
"It does have that effect," he answered, the wonder of it all creeping into his voice.
"Yet, perhaps he was ahead of the game. Perhaps..."
She did not finish the sentence, but broke out with fresh enthusiasm,
Oh, say, I just love this conversation with you. I love to hear you talk. You give me ideas.
Johnson's heart was too full for utterance. He could only think of his own happiness. End of part 1 of chapter 11.